Morning, everyone. Today's Daf Pesachim, Daf Chaf Aleph. We are going to conclude the first parak of Pesachim this morning with a couple of summary statements regarding the first parak, and then obviously that leads us to the beginning of the second parak. Second parak, a very exciting parak. We'll get to that in just a moment. But first, let's finish up. The end of the first parak took us on a week detour of the halachas of Tum and Tahara. Tum and Tahara, not really the main topic of discussion in our Masechta. Kachim, by the way, is a main topic of our discussion in our Masechta. In fact, we're going to be spending, of the 10 prakim of Pesachim, 5 prakim, right, a best kept secret, 5 prakim of Pesachim is dedicated to Kachim, to talk about Karban Pesach, Hilchos Karban Pesach. So, although Pesach, Pesachim was, you know, much anticipated after Erevin, after 10 prakim of Erevin, but I'm assuring you, though, that of these 10 prakim, 5 of them are dealing with Hilchos Karbanos. So that's good. So that's not such a secret. But but it tucked away in the Masechta at the end of the first parak is a week of Tum and Tahara. The reason why the Gemara spent a week talking about Tum and Tahara is because of a Mishnah. Mishnah talked about the halachas of Tum and Tahara, specifically about Hosafas Tumah, adding Tumah to something which is already Tameh, and then the leap that Rabbi Meir made, that if I can add to Tumah, can't I create Tumah? To which Rav Yossi said, I don't understand how you made such a leap. And then the Gemara's ensuing discussion for nearly a week about this topic of Tumah Tahara, Hosafas Tumah, Rav Meir's leap, etc., etc. Now, after all said and done, we had a number of Mishnayos, and basically what we started with yesterday, and we're going to finish up right now, is just basically tying up all loose ends. Meaning there were a number of Mishnayos that, seem to not contradict one another, but just simply don't work in consonance with one another. And so what the Gemara is doing now at the tail end of this whole discussion is kind of tying things up. So yesterday we noted that Rav Yehoshua seems to be somewhat inconsistent, where Rav Yehoshua in our Mishnah allows a person to burn Truma Tameya with Truma Taluya. That is Rabbi Yehoshua of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, it's the last lines of our Mishnah, Rav Yehoshua Amar, Shteim Ka'acha, said if I have Tameya and Taluya, they can be burnt together. And then we know Rabbi Yehoshua from a different Braisa says that they cannot be burnt together. They must be burnt separately. And what was the Gemara's response to that? Two opinions according to Rabbi Yehoshua. Two versions of Rabbi Yehoshua. And that was where we got to yesterday. We are in the Gemara. We're on Chaf Amud Beis. We're halfway down in the Amud. Okay. Literally halfway down the page, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, Rami Truma Apischa. Okay, I believe it's where we left off yesterday. It's the first word of the line is Betluya. It's halfway down, halfway up. Okay, the Gemara continues now again. Just we're tying up a lot of loose ends. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, Rami Truma Apischa, Mishani. So Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina strikes the contradiction between Truma and Pesach. And so let's explain. Again, our Mishnah says that according to Rav Yehoshua, what you can do is you can burn Truma Tameya with Taluya, with Safek. Uriminu, the Gemara says, I'm going to note now the following. We've seen this Mishnah once, twice, I think three times now. Chavashel Truma Shanola Ba Safek, Tuma. Let's say I have a barrel of Truma. And in which Safek, meaning maybe Tuma touched it, maybe did not. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Im Haisa Menachas Bamakam Atorfa, Yenichena Bamakam Amotznav, Im Haisa Megula Yichasenu. So Rabbi Eliezer says, there still is a mitzvah of Shimur, protect it. Because we don't know it's Tameh, it may be Tameh, but on the other hand, it may be Tahor. So Rabbi Eliezer says, we have an obligation to still ensure it's Shmira, it's protection, and it because it may be Tahor, keep protecting it. And Rav Yehoshua Omer, Im Haisa Menechas Bamakam Amutza Yinechen Bamakam Atorfa, Vim Haisa Mechusa Yigalena. And what does Rav Yehoshua say? Let it go. Expose it. Make it more vulnerable to Tuma. So you can't actually be Metame it, but what you can do is you can put it in a very exposed area and let it become Tame. Good. Oh, so what the Gemara notes, however, is wow, that's different. That's different than Rav Yehoshua of our Mishnah, meaning Rav Yehoshua of our Mishnah says that what you could do with Safek is you could burn it together with Tameh, which means that with your own hands what you're going to be doing is you're going to be being Mitameh the Safek. You're going to turn the Safek into Vadei Tumah. That's our Mishnah. Meanwhile, that Mishnah in Trumas, which the Gemara just quoted, Rav Yehoshua only gives you a pass on exposing it to more tumah, but not actually being metame with your hands. And the Gemara notes this inconsistency. Gurama in biyadaim lo. That's only gurama, but not with you can't do it with your hands. Umishani, and again, not an elegant answer, but an answer. Ha Rabbi Shimon, Aliba de Rav Yehoshua, Ha Rabbi Yosi, Aliba de Rav Yehoshua. Two versions of Rav Yehoshua, meaning we know that Rav Yehoshua allows some sort of tumah to the safek, just a question of degrees. According to one version of Rav Yehoshua, you can expose it to tumah, but that's it. And according to our Mishnah, you can do more than expose it. You can actually burn it together with truma tameya. Fine. That's another loose end the Gemara tied up. And again, it's not really tied up. It's just now the Gemara telling us we have two versions of what Rav Yehoshua actually said. Next. Rabbi Lezer, Rami Truma, Truma Mishani. Another seeming stira between two Mishnayos. Umi Amar Rav Yehoshua Grama in Biyadayim Lo. So let's go back to that brisa that we just quoted regarding Chavis. So Chavis that became Safek, what did Rav Yehoshua say? Rav Yehoshua said that you can expose it and allow it to become Tameh. Urim Minhu. And the Gemara says, what about the following? Look at the following Mishnah. Chavis Hashum Mishnish Bra Begas Al Yona. Again, we've seen this Mishnah already once, I think twice already. So I have Truma in the upper vat. V'tachteh Chulun Tameyan, and right below it is Chulun Tameyan. So the Chulun Tameh that's underneath is obviously Tameh. Umode Rabbi Eliezer U Rabbi Yoshua. Shem Yachol Lahatzah Mimena Revius Betar Yatzel. Now, what happens is the upper vat breaks. The Truma is now dripping into the lower vat. And as we already discussed, it's a double-edged sword. Because if I let it drip in, so what's going to happen now is the Truma is going to become Tameh, because it's Chul and Tameya that's below. On the other hand, the Chul and Tameya, once you have the Truma dripping in, so now the Chul and Tameya is going to be prohibited to a non-Kohen. So basically, it's a lose-lose. I'm losing the Truma and I'm losing the Chulin. So what what can I do at that point in time? So the starting point of the discussion is, if I can save any of the Truma, so save the Truma. What does that mean, save the Truma? Meaning, in my house right now, I don't have any Kalim Tahorim. But if I go out and I come back and I'll get some Kalim Tahorim in order to rescue and save some of the Truma, so we start with the assumption that if I can save any Truma, so do it. Save the Truma. But what if I can't save any Truma? I don't have any Kalim Tahorim, and I can't get any Kalim Tahorim. And by the time I get it, all of it's going to drip down below. So what can I do? So this is subject to a debate. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Teired, Vititame Vayita Mena Biyad. Now Rabbi Eliezer says, I know its destiny is that it's going to become Tame. Rabbi Eliezer says, I don't care. You can't be Metame with your own hands. So therefore, even though by you being Metame, the Truma that's falling in, being metame means simply collecting it in a kli, which is tame. By you doing so, you're being metame with your hands. You can't do that under any circumstance. And even though the shuma is going to go down and become tame, Rabbi Elazar says, I don't care. You can't be metame it. And Rabbi Yoshua, Omer, you tame in a biyad. And Rabbi Yoshua says, no, save your chulin. Don't let the truma drip down into the chulin. I know that if it drips down, it's going to become tame anyway. So If that means now that you could stop it by capturing it in the kli, which is tameh, even though you're going to be being metameh the truma, it's fine, because you get to save the chulin below. And anyway, the truma is going to become tameh. So, what does Rav Yehoshua say over there? You can be metameh truma. So again, now, we're contrasting. The Mishnah that we quoted before says that what Rav Yehoshua allows you to do, and the only thing allows you to do, is expose it to truma. And here he's allowing you actually to be metame biyadaim. And the Gemara says, okay, but I don't think that's a stira. And here we do have an elegant answer, a fundamental answer. The Gemara says, here you have a mitigating factor. The mitigating factor is that if I don't stop the truma from dripping down, I'm going to lose all that chulin. Because that's going to be, if it drips down, it's going to be chulin and truma mixed together, otherwise known as dimuah, prohibited to a non-kohen. I'm going to lose all that chulin. So here, there's a mitigating factor. I could be metame the truma so that I'll be saving all the chulin. That's what's called hefsed merubah. That's a significant loss. And so, it's different. It's very different. As opposed to previously, when I just had truma, and there was no salvation, I wasn't saving any money. So there, all Rav Yehoshua will allow you to do is expose it to tumah, but not actually be metame with your hands. Here, when we're talking about a loss of chulin, loss of money, so therefore you can actually be metame the chuma. Good. Maskifla Rava Mastisa Nami Ika Hefsed Eitzim. So the Gemara says, okay, what about our Mishnah? Our Mishnah, what do we have? We have two piles of truma. One is tame, one is tahora. What does everyone agree to? They must be burned in two different piles. So now, in other words, I have to make now two bonfires. Two bonfires means that I have to use more wood. If I made one bonfire, so then that would just simply be one bonfire for burning. Two bonfires, more wood. Isn't that something that costs me money? So Amalei Abaye lehefsim ruba chashu lehefsim ulo chashishu. So Abaye says, well, you're going to have to strike a difference. When we're talking about losing all that chulin in the lower gas, so there, that's a lot of chulin that we're about to lose, with all the truma coming in, that's a significant loss. That's what the Gemara calls hefse meruba. So there, stop the truma from descending, even if that means I'm going to be metame the truma with my own hands, but that's hefse meruba. Here, if we're just all it means is I'm going to have to get a couple extra logs in order to create a second bonfire so that I can burn the two truma separately, that's not hefse meruba, that's only hefse muat. Abaye says that's different. And the Gemara wants to know the validity of such a distinction of Abaye. Gemara says, "D'tanya, look at the following braisa." Again, the same construct case. I have oil of truma that broke in the upper vat, and below it is a chulin tamein. And once again, with same dilemma. Now, if it drips in, so the truma is going to become tamei. But if it drips in, the chulin below is going to become inedible by non-kohanim. Mode Rav Yelazar, Rav Yeshua, Shimechol Hatzim, Yemen, Rav Yitz, Betar Yatzil. So again, starting point of the discussion is, if I could save any truma, save it. The imlav, but if I can't save, Terev Titam, Eval Yitam, and Abiyad. So if not, then go ahead and save it, and don't let it become tame with your hands. Now you'll notice here in this braisa, What is different about this brisa than what we said earlier? There's no debate. Meaning here, when it comes to oil, tere v'titame v'al yitamenu biyad. Okay, stop the truma from falling in. According to everybody, umayshna shem and derai. I'm sorry, umayshna shem and derai lahadlik yayinami rai lazilof. So the Gemara says now. The reason is because basically we're allowed to save the oil. Now, the difference between oil and wine, the Gemara notes, oil, if it becomes... I'm sorry, wait, hold on a second. I apologize, by the way. In other words, if you can't... Sorry. If you can't save any of the truma, so then, teiret v'titame v'al yitamenu biyad. Let it go down. I apologize. The braisa ends off by saying, let it go down and let it become tame. And this is not subject for a debate. Okay. Now, why? Because when it comes to oil, even if the oil in the lower vat becomes tame, not the end of the world. Why isn't it the end of the world? Because I may not be able to eat it, but I could use it for fuel and illumination. Okay. Are you sure? In other words, we'll get benefit from it. Okay, so in other words, that's okay. Now we're on the right track. So, huh? Sure. In other words, truma tameya. So you can the Kohen can do is he can use it for light and fuel. In other words, he has to destroy it, but he can get hana while destroying it. Right? The Gemara says a couple places that if he gets hana after its destruction, that's no good. Now, or I should say rather, if he gets hana before the destruction, that's no good. It has to be that its destruction and the hana can be gotten at the same time from truma tameya.
It's still a loss for the owner of the oil.
It's a loss, but not as significant. And the Gemara now wants to make that point. Meaning, when it comes to wine, if the chulin below is going to have truma fall in, like that's it. We're going to lose all that wine. That's a significant loss. That's why we're going to have a debate whether or not we could stop the truma from coming in, even if that means I'm going to have to be metame the truma. Here, when it comes to oil, it's a loss, unquestionably, but not as significant. Because what you could still do is you could still say to the Kohen, here, look, it's oil, it's tamea, but you could use it. You can't eat it, but you could use it.
Did you not learn earlier that a liquid cannot metame another liquid?
So again, that's some opinion. But oh, right? But that's not the accepted halacha. And midrabanan, I think everyone agrees that midrabanan is going to be mitami. So maishna shemen derai lahalak yayin nami rai lazilof. The Gemara says, okay, look, tummy oil, I understand, can be used for light. So the difference between truma tahor and truma tamea when it comes to oil, that's not such a major monetary change. Wine wants to argue the Gemara. If the wine becomes tameh, I know I can't drink it. What we could do is we could make zilof with it. Now, zilof, in the good old days, they wanted their houses to smell nice. So we have these things that we plug into the wall, right, that make the house smell good. In the good old days, they used to sprinkle wine around the house. This is what's called zilof. So the Gemara says, can't I do that with the truma tameh? Now, assuming that's so, so then the Gemara says, I really don't see the difference between oil which becomes tameh and wine which becomes tameh. Oil which becomes tameh I could use for light. I could use for illumination. Wine that becomes tameh, same thing. Well, not same, but I could use it for zilof. And doesn't that now mean that we haven't really suffered a major financial loss with the wine which was the wine which is edible versus the wine which is inedible? I guess. It's funny, I was thinking that as well.
Because you're saying a coin could the tumah issue.
Yeah.
A coin could take truma.
Truma tamea of wine.
No, forget tamea.
Right.
Could you take
no, no. If it's not tamea, so then you have to eat it. The mitzvah is for the coin to eat it. But once it becomes tamea, so then it could. Yeah. Vechitem a zilof lav milsehi. And the Gemara says, and maybe you'll just poo poo zilof. Meaning it's not. Well, who does that? And is that really people going to pay for that? And Bahama Shmuel Mishum Rabbi Chia shows him ilug b'sela. So the Gemara quotes in the name of Rabbi Chia. Now I don't know what this is. This is like what the Gemara is giving is like it's almost like regulatory numbers. Meaning this is how much you should be paying for wine. I'm not really sure what halachically what this is, but. Okay, show semilug besela. But if you're going to drink wine, so if you're drinking a log of it, right, that's four quarters, obviously, four revis, so you should be paying a sela for that. Okay, that's how much you should be paying for good wine. But mizalfin milog, but if you plan on buying wine for the purpose of zilof bishnayim, there you could spend. You could spend two selaim if you want to. So in other words, Gomar is still now making an argument. There is no financial loss when wine becomes inedible. Because I could do zilof with the wine. So now, we're back to just trying to understand. When it came to oil, and the scenario of the God Elyon and the God Tachtona, and the Truma now is flowing down. So when it comes to oil, everyone agrees. In other words, try to save it. But if you can't, let it go down. Why? Because even the oil, when the oil becomes inedible, that's not a major financial loss. I could use the oil for illumination. But when it comes to wine, no, there, at least according to Rabbi Yehoshua, stop it from going down to save the chulin. The Gemara says, I don't understand. It's not a major financial loss. There is this concept of zilof, and Rabbi Chia says people will pay top dollar for the purpose of zilof. So why are we stopping the truma from going down into the chulin to man below? The Gemara's answer, one word answer, bechadash. We're talking about new wine. Okay, just, I accept the Gemara for its point. I do not know the distinction between new wine versus old wine. Old wine has a pleasant aroma, can be used for the purpose of zilof. That's old wine, but new wine cannot. Fine, vahara liyash. No, the Gemara says, okay, but you know, anything new can become old. Okay, it's... So even though currently it's new wine, can't we let it sit around and let it get old? Asibali de Takal, the Gemara says, what a bad idea. What a terrible idea. Because if you let Truma Tamea now just sit around, right, so you have it in your cabinet, and it's sitting around, and even if we label it, but someone's going to go in there and drink it, and put it in their salad, or in this case of wine, also put in their salad. But in other words, someone's going to drink it. So it's just such a bad idea. Meaning if you have truma tamea, even though you're allowed to get benefit from it, but you should get benefit from it right away. And don't put yourself in a situation where, yeah, it's wine, it's truma tamea, but we're going to use it for zilof. We just have to wait like a month, 2 months, a year, until it really gets older and more pleasant smelling. So shemenami asibar leidei tekala. So the Gemara says, okay, but when I have oil, which is Tameh, aren't we worried about the same thing? Meaning, I know I can use it for illumination. Aren't I worried that someone's going to use it for food? So the Gemara says, once you have oil which becomes Tameh, there's a requirement to put it in a dirty utensil. Meaning, don't use your best kalim to put in the Truma Tameh oil, but rather put it in a clean maos. And from that point going forward, you now know that this is Truma Tameh. No one's going to eat it. So Yainami Remele B'Kli Maos, the Gemara says, well, if that's great advice for the Truma oil that becomes Tameh, why can't that be good advice for the wine which becomes Tameh? So Lezil of Kabai Lei B'Kli Maos Rami Lei. So the Gemara says, just not pragmatic. Meaning, my intent is to use it for Zilof, which means that I want it to be a pleasant aroma. And now I put it in a dirty, disgusting utensil. It defeats the whole purpose. It's just simply not going to work. Okay. Ad Kan, so that ended a long thread of Gemara. Basically, what comes out now is as follows. Again, as far as the basic issue of Rabbi Yehoshua allows you to burn Suffolk with Tameh in our Mishnah, but under no circumstances does he allow you to burn Tahora with Tameh. And meanwhile, in that Mishnah and Trumos, what he allows you to do is that if the Truma is running down into the Chulin Tameh below, Rav Yehoshua says, if I can't save any Truma, so go ahead and collect it. And that's talking about oil. And what's the difference? And the Gemara says, Hefsa Merubah. Because once I'm saving the Chulin below, so that I'm saving myself from a serious financial loss. And then the Gemara went into a rather long discussion of Hefsin Merubah versus Hefsin Muat. Wine, there is the oil is. The cases that we were discussing were not with oil, with wine. Wine is a significant loss. Oil is not a significant loss. Fine, but again, all this was just to iron out the distinction between Rav Yehoshua of our Mishnah versus Rav Yehoshua in the Mishnah in Truma. V'takala atzma tanai. Now, this idea, I have Truma Tameh. I just can't let it hang around the house because someone's going to by accident drink it. Forgetting that it's Truma. This, says the Gemara, is actually subject to a machlokas. Tanaim d'tanya, chavish al yayin shel Truma shenit meis. I have wine that becomes Tameh. Beishama omen tishapech chaval. So Beishama says, you know what you do with it? Spill it out right away. Don't let it linger. Don't let it hang around. Uveisela omen ta says zilof. And Beisela says you can allow zilof to be done with it. So you see right now that this issue of whether or not will allow wine to hang around, subject to a machlokas. Am Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi ani achria. So Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi says, here, let me try this. Let me try to strike some sort of compromise position. Besides the tishapei chaval, but ma'ista says zilof. If this occurred out in the field, there's no zilof out in the field. I don't sprinkle wine out in the field in order to make the field some pleasant smelling. So there, I'm worried that someone's going to by accident drink it. So therefore, spill it out immediately. If it occurred in the house, where we do practice zilof, so then we can let it linger around for some time. This is a compromised position. So Rabbi Shmuel b'Rav Yossi trying to take a little bit of Beit Shammai and a little bit of Beit Hillel. Now, igadami b'chadash tishapeh chaval b'yashanta says zilof. And according to another version, the difference is not where it occurred, whether it occurred in the field or occurred in the house, but what state the wine is in. If the wine is in a new state, so then tishapech miyad, meaning pour it out immediately. Because my alternative is to just let it sit around for weeks, months, maybe even years, until it gets old and pleasant smelling. And the concern is that someone's going to drink it before that point in time. But if the wine is already old, so then you could use it for the purpose of zilof. And that's the compromise position, according to the second version, that Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shmuel strikes between, other way around, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi strikes between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Okay. But what you get from all this is that whether or not we're worried about Takala turns into a machlokas down between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. As long as we're here, the Gemara notes, Ein achrash lishi machras. This compromise position of Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi is not a compromised position. Again, we go back to a Rashi that we quoted a couple days ago, maybe more than that. Rashi over here basically repeats the same idea. A compromised position is where I take a little bit from your thoughts and I take a little bit from your thoughts. Over here, however, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, don't quote me out of context, they don't have thoughts. Meaning, Beit Shammai says unilaterally, Oh, you know what happens when your truma becomes tummy? Just pour it out immediately. We don't know what his, let's put it in better terms. We don't know what he's thinking. We don't know why he's saying that. You're assuming because I don't want it laying around and someone's going to drink it by accident. That may be true. But he doesn't say that. He just simply says pour it out immediately. And Basilo says, no, you can let it, you know, you could use it for Zilof. So when Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shmuel is trying to strike this compromise position, we don't know it's really a compromise because we don't know if I'm adapting a little bit of his thinking, I'm adapting a little bit of his thinking. So therefore, the Gemara says, this is not a compromised position. When would it be a compromised position? Very easy. When they're both explaining that here it's okay, but here it's not okay. Or if both of them say, it's not okay in this case and in this case. And the other position would be, it's okay in this case and in this case. And then Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Yossi would be saying, you know, in this case, I think it's like him. And this, if he's extracting from both, so then that would be a compromise. This is not a compromise. I'm Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, Machlokish, Nafla, Pachos, Mimea, Sar, Chulin, Tamein. Aval Nafla, Mea, Chulin, Tamein, Divra, Hakol, Terev, Viti, Tamei, V'al, Yitamin, Abiyad. And one last point to consider in the case of the two vats, one on top of the other. Again, in the upper vat, Truma, Tamea. In the lower vat, Chulin, sorry. In the upper vat, Truma, Tahora. In the lower vat, Chulin, Tamein. And it's dripping from the upper vat to the lower vat. There's a broken leak, and it's dripping. So we said, what? It's machlokas between Rav Yehoshua and Rav Eliezer, whether I should save the chulin below. However, if let's say it's only a little bit of truma, and it's a lot of chulin, and the ratio is 100 to 1, because as we know, in order to be mevatel truma, truma can be is subject to bittul, but not the general ratio of 2 to 1, 60 to 1. But in other words, to be mevatel truma, you need 100 to 1. So, if the amount of truma that falls into the chulin below is either the ratio of 1 to 100 or less, meaning 1 to 101, 1 to 102, so then let it go down. Yes, the truma is going to become tameh, but it's also going to become batal. The chulin will not be lost. You didn't, in other words, this is happening on its own. You didn't actually puncture the upper vat. It broke on its own. So you're not allowed to...
You have your choice to prevent it. You don't have to prevent it.
Yeah, I understand that. But you're right. This is not... Right. The rule is emavat lanissa lechatchila, but you didn't do anything. This happened on its own. So the Gemara says, Tanya Nami Hachi, the Gemara says, we have a braisa saying the same exact point. Chavish Nishbra Begaz Al Yona. V'techtea mea chulin, and below is 100 chulin. Now again, if I could save truma and prevent it from becoming tamei, obviously that's my first operative. My first goal is to try to save the truma. However, so then, but if not, let it go down and let it become tamei, because when all said and done, I should not be metamei with my own hands. And anyway, in this case, It's going to become batal. Now, the one last thing that we're going to talk about is just, he agreed to him. Moda Rabbi Eliezer l'Rav Yehoshua. Hi, Moda Rabbi Eliezer l'Rav Yehoshua. Moda Rabbi Yehoshua l'Rabbi Eliezer. Slow down. The Gemara says, I don't understand. Who's generally machmir? Who's generally mekel? Rabbi Eliezer on these issues. Rabbi Eliezer is generally the machmir, and Rabbi Yehoshua is generally the mekel. So when we say I'll cave into you, I'll yield to you, and I'll tell you that yeah, let it go down into the pit below. Well, who's yielding to whom? The assumption should be Rabbi Yehoshua is yielding to Rabbi Eliezer. But meanwhile, Moda, the words of the Brice is Moda Rabbi Eliezer li Rabbi Yehoshua. The Gemara says it really should go the other way. Moda Rabbi Yehoshua li Rabbi Eliezer mi ba'ile. I'm Rava Epoch. So Rava says, okay, point well taken. Why? Because Rabbi Yehoshua is generally the makel. He'll allow you to save the truma. In this case, because the ratio is 1 to 100, so you know what? Let it go down. That's Rabbi Eliezer's general position anyway. So if anything, Rabbi Yehoshua should admit to Rabbi Eliezer, you know what, I'm going to agree with you in this case. But the wording of the Braisa is, Rabbi Eliezer agrees to Rabbi Yehoshua. It's backwards. So Rabbi's response is, oh, okay, take out take out the pen and edit and actually change the words of the braisa. So Rav Huna b'rei de Rav Yeshua amar lo lam lo tepuch, and Rav Huna b'rei de Rav Yeshua says, no, don't edit. I told you, one of the things I find come up again and again is the reluctance or tolerance of the Amorayim to change braisos. It's a universal theme that comes up time and again throughout the Gemara, and something that I should really start noting. Like, in other words, can I point to various Amorayim and say he's always ready to change a braisa, and he's never willing to change a braisa? So I have to start making mental notes, and better yet, actual notes themselves, in terms of if I can find a thread. But Rav Huna b'rei de Rav Yeshua says, no, don't do that. Don't touch the braisa. Hacha b'mayiskinim, because what we're dealing with over here is b'klisha tochatar v'gabatame. The case in the braisa over here is a very specific case, where I did find a kli to save the truma, but the kli is such where the back of the kli is tamei and the inside of the kli is tahor. Are you confused by that? Well, good. What happened over there? Where do we have such a scenario? So we had this discussion about 3 or 4 days ago in the daf, where we talked about how mashkin liquids are not metamei kli, and we know Rabbi Yehuda said at one point they are metame kli, but even he retracted. Mashkin cannot be metame kli. That's midaraisa. What the Chachamim did is the Chachamim say that if your mashkin, which is tame, touches a kli, the kli becomes tame. Why did they do that? So as we discussed in the past, the reason why they did that is because of the bodily secretions of azava and azava, where if I have the spit of azava or azava, that's an av hatuma. And so therefore, the Chachamim were worried that if this tamei liquid gets onto the kli, and we just simply shrug our shoulders, which min haTorah we're allowed to, so when the spit of a zavar goes on the kli, we're also going to shrug our shoulders, not realizing the spit of a zavar is an avatama. So what the Chachamim did is that any time you have tamei mashkin touching a kli, they declare the kli to become tamei. Fine. However, what the Chachamim also did is they wanted everyone to know this is not Tumah Daraisa, this is just Tumah Darabanan. So what they do, and we find the Chachamim doing this from time to time, so they put in like almost like a code for the rest of us to know this is not Tumah Daraisa, this is just Tumah Darabanan. And what's the code? That if the mashkin touched the outside of a kli, only the outside of a kli becomes tame, not the inside of a kli. Okay? So so our case over here is talking about a kli that came into contact with mashkin which are tamei derabanan. The mashkin derabanan touched the kli from the outside, making only the outside tamei. So now I can save the truma, but with this very unusual kli where the inside is tahora and the outside is tamei. And so therefore, ma'u detema nigzo damanaga gaba b'truma. I might have thought this is really risky business. Meaning, yeah, I'm saving the truma, but that's only if I'm insured that the truma is going to go inside the kli and none of it's touching the outside. It's a little bit risky. I might have thought, in this circumstance, don't do it. So, kamashman, that's the chiddush of the braisa. And that's why the braisa has the order of Rabbi Eliezer being moda to Rabbi Yehoshua. Hadron al... Yeah, so in other words, when all said and done, whose position do we accept? So usually, on a machlokes between Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Eliezer, we'll take Rabbi Yehoshua, not the position of Rabbi Eliezer. In this case, oddly enough, we do. The Rambam does follow the position of Rabbi Eliezer. For burning Safek and Tamei. For burning Tahar and Tamei, I mean...
They both
agree that they have to be burned separately. So, but to burn Safek and Tamei together, so oddly enough, the Rambam goes like Rabbi Eliezer. I don't know why. They have to be burned in two separate piles. So the Chametz, right, the Chametz, that machlok is between Rav Meir and Rav Yossi. I don't know. I would imagine. In other words, I'd imagine. It looks like over here, I didn't look it up. It looks like the Rambam accepts the position of Rabbi Yossi. And anyway, look, I mean, we spent almost a week discussing how Rabbi Meir made a leap, and how did Rabbi Meir make that leap?
That's why it's in, also that, like, the best idea that the sense wouldn't make that sense, you have separate fires.
Right. Okay. Hajalach Orla Barasar, that is the end of the first parak of Pesachim. Okay, and now we begin parak number two. Parak number two is a very popular parak amongst the yeshivas. When the yeshivas learn Pesachim, so they're either going to jump to the 10th parak of Pesachim, which talks about the Seder, understandably, or the second parak. Well, what makes the second parak so exciting? So because it talks about Isser Hana. Meaning, look, here's what we know. We know that the Torah prohibits chametz in one of three ways. The Torah tells us not to eat chametz, Torah tells us not to own chametz, and the Torah says not to get benefit from chametz as well on Pesach. Okay. Now, in terms of eating, there are actual psukim that say don't eat chametz on Pesach. In terms of ownership, the Torah actually says don't own it. Not ownership, but right, bal yira bal yimatzei. Okay, which is basically ownership. Where does the Torah say that I'm not allowed to benefit from chametz on Pesach? That's a trick question. There is no pasuk in the Torah that actually says you're not allowed to get benefit from chametz on Pesach. And so what our parak introduces us to is a very basic discussion that really is not just limited to chametz on Pesach, and as we're going to see over the course of the second parak, is a broader discussion, Isser Hana, where does that come from? Chametz from Pesach as a prime example, but there are a number of other examples. How do we know about Isser Hana? Isser Achila, the Torah says, don't eat. Lo sochlu chametz. It's straight out of the Torah. But don't get benefit? It doesn't say that in the Torah. And so what we're going to engage in over the course of the second parak is a very basic discussion of where does Isser Hana come from? How do I know that we're not allowed to benefit from chametz on Pesach? Okay, that is a general introduction to the second parak. And most of the second parak is discussing the Isser of chametz. And as we get to the end, we start to talk a little bit about matzah.
Is it eating
itself?
Maror.
Huh?
Is it eating itself?
Okay, good. So that's the end of today's daf, and really tomorrow's daf is going to be that discussion. Kol sha'ashemut alecho ma'achil lebehema lechaya ula ofos. Umutu lenachri umutu ba'anaso. Okay. The entire hour that you're allowed to eat, you're allowed to feed chametz to your animals. Now let's go over what we know. Midday chametz becomes aser min haTorah. Okay, and that is after the 6th hour, before the 7th hour. Okay, during that 6th hour, meaning on a perfect day, that would be from 11 a.m. to 12 a.m. to 12 noon. During that 6th hour, chametz is aser midrabbanan. It's rabbinically prohibited to eat and to benefit from. In fact, we're going to be learning over the course of today's daf that if, let's say, I take chametz during the 6th hour, min haTorah it's mutter. The chachamim stepped in and said, it's asa b'achil ba'ana. And I went over to a woman and I say, harei at mekudeshes li b'chametz zu. Okay, I know it's not romantic, but it's fine. Okay, and b'chametz zu, the kedushin is not work. Because it's asr midrabanan, both in achila and in hana. So, in other words, during the 6th hour, it's asr midrabanan, both eating and benefiting. What about during the 5th hour? So as we saw earlier, that's a machlokus between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. Rav Meir says you're allowed to eat it, and Rav Yehuda says, no, you're not. You can benefit from it, but you're not allowed to eat it. What about during the 4th hour? Everyone agrees that during the 4th hour, from 9 o'clock to 10 a.m., you're allowed to eat chametz. It's during that 5th hour, we have a major debate between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. Rav Meir says you're allowed to eat chametz during the 5th hour from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m., and Rav Yehuda says you're not. As we all know, we follow the position of Rav Yehuda la halacha. Good. That's la halacha. Let's go back to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that during the hour that you're allowed to eat, you can feed chametz to your animals. Who's that? Whose position right now is the Mishnah following? Let's think about it just a little bit more. It could certainly be Rav Yehuda. It sounds a lot more like Rabbi Meir. In fact, if you think about it, I'd say it's definitely Rabbi Meir, aside from the fact that the Gemara says it's not. But before we get to the Gemara, it's Rabbi Meir. Meaning what Rabbi Meir is telling you is that during the 5th hour, I can benefit from chametz and I can eat chametz. You see, according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's an hour in the morning where I'm allowed to benefit, but I'm not allowed to eat. Our Mishnah says that kol shah shemutar lechol ma'achil. All the time that you're allowed to eat, you're allowed to feed. That really only works for Rabbi Meir. that doesn't work for Rabbi Yehuda.
If it was written the other way around, that would be
this. Okay.
It's so, a weird, it doesn't sound like there's any chiddush to it. Like, of course, if you can eat, you can
eat. Right. Correct. In other words, right. The Mishnah is clearly taking us to the last hour, not the last hour of the morning, which according to everybody, universally, from 11 a.m. to 12 noon, universally, chametz is asur midrabbanan. So in other words, the Mishnah is basically taking us to the edge, which is the fifth hour of the day, clearly. But what the Mishnah is then also describing is that during that hour, you can feed it to your animals, and you can eat it. It sounds like, I don't want to tease this anymore. I mean, the Gemara is going to ask the question straight out, but it sounds like Rabbi Meir. Kipshuta. So kol shel shemutal lechol ma'achal lebehem lechay leofos. So you can eat it. You can feed it to your animals. Umocher lenachri. You can sell it to a non-Jew. Umutar ba'anasar, and you're allowed to get benefit from it. I mean, the Gemara is going to ask. It's obvious. Meaning, if you're allowed to eat it, of course you're allowed to get benefit from it. So why does the Mishnah even need to say that? Mutar la'anasam. Okay, the Gemara is going to deal with all these issues. Avrazmano, asur ba'anaso, once the time has passed, you're not allowed to get benefit from it. And again, the Gemara is going to jump on the Mishnah. Again, it's obvious. Obvious. So the Gemara is going to discuss. Lo yasik botan v'kiraim. I can't fuel an oven with chametz after it becomes prohibited. And again, the Gemara is going to just keep asking. That's obvious. Rabbi Yehuda Omer ein bir chametz ala sreifa. Now, once you get to the point where I have to destroy chametz, how do I destroy chametz? So we have over here a basic machlokus between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim. Rav Yehuda says bir chametz is sreifa, and it's the only valid way to destroy it. Sreifa, I got to burn it. The Chachamim omrim af mefar v'zer l'ruch o matol yam, and the Chachamim say that you can crumble it, you could spread, you could throw it into the wind, or you could throw it into the ocean. There's an important discussion amongst the Rishonim. When the Chachamim physician is introduced, it says af. Now af, what does the word af mean? Even. Now if the word af is kept in the Mishnah, it's here, I mean you can't deny it. If the word af is in the Mishnah, what does that mean? It means that they agree with Rav Yehuda, perfect. It means they agree with Rav Yehuda, but in addition to that, you don't have to burn it, you can also throw it into the wind, throw it into the ocean. You can take a look at the Rush in the back of the Gemara over here, right? And in the Rif, they take out the word af. And some are of the opinion that if you take out the word af, it means that the Chachamim are not agreeing at all with Rav Yehuda. It's a total disagreement, and that means that according to the Chachamim, burning is not an option at all. Interesting. In other words, again, it engenders a longer discussion. If that's true, why? Why according to the Chachamim, can you not burn it? Why do you have to throw it into the ocean or throw it into the wind? And how do you understand the Rif and all the Rishonim who don't have the word af? When I say they take it out, it means probably more that they didn't have it to begin with. I'm not sure if they, in other words, okay. Anyway. Let's start with the Gemara. Okay, so the simplest diak in our Mishnah, which is that the Mishnah creates a relationship between eating and feeding. When you can eat chametz, you can feed chametz to your animals. Which means then that if you can't eat chametz, you can't feed it to your animal. Okay, and so therefore, the Gemara arrives at what sounds to be a really sound conclusion. Our Mishnah is not going like Rav Yehuda. De'i Rav Yehuda ha'ika chamesh de'ena ochel umachel. Because for Rav Yehuda, there's an hour where I don't have the relationship. The fifth hour of Erev Pesach, I'm not allowed to eat chametz, but I'm allowed to feed it to my animals. Chametz from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m., according to Rav Yehuda, asur ba'achila, mutar ba'hana. Yes.
Maybe feeding to your animals is also achila.
It's not. The Torah's prohibition of eating is only for you and me, not for animals. Rabbi Meir Omer Ochlin Kol Chamish V'Sarfim B'Tchilas Sheish. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ochlin Kol Arba V'Tolin Kol Chamish V'Sarfim B'Tchilas Sheish. The Gemara goes over a Mishnah that we saw earlier in the first parak. So the Gemara is saying now we can engage in the discussion which we started off with when we started the parak. Who is the author of our Mishnah? It seems right now unequivocally it's Rav Meir. The Elamai Rabbi Meir he. So the Gemara says, okay, so it's got to be. Our Mishnah's going like Rabbi Meir. Which, by the way, Stam Mishnah, ke Rabbi Meir. Again, sounds like a sound conclusion. Hai koshah shemot alecho ma'achil, koshah she'ochel ma'achil, mi ba'ile. And we had this discussion in the first parak of Psachim, and now we're going to have it a second time. It's great review. What word stands out in the Mishnah? The word mutter. Meaning, if the Mishnah, and remember we had this all the way back on Daf Gimel, the Mishnah, if it wants to make a point, make it as tersely as you possibly can. Why not the Mishnah just simply say, Kol shah she'ochel ma'achil? That's an easy way to say it. It's a very efficient way to say it. And you get the point across pretty clearly. That when you can eat chametz, you can feed it to your animals. Why does the Mishnah say, Kol shah she'mutter le'achol? That word mutter, it's extraneous. So, Amar Rava Bar Ula Masisim Rambi Gamliel hi. So, out of the field, now what the Gemara is suggesting, you know what our Mishnah is following like? Rambam Gamliel. What? Where did he come from? Well, he actually came out the first parak. We actually went over the opinion of Rambam Gamliel. Sometime earlier, Rambam Gamliel says that during the fifth hour, I basically agree with Rabbi Huda. You're not allowed to eat chametz during the fifth hour, even though you're allowed to get benefit from it. But Kohanim with their truma, again, the truma, sensitive, Kedusha, so let the Kohanim give them another hour to finish up their truma. So now what the Gemara is suggesting is, you know who our Mishnah is? None of the above. But not A and not B. It's not Rabbi Meir, it's not Rabbi Yehuda. It's a third sheet of Rabbi Gamliel. Did not Rabbi Gamliel, Omer Chulin Ne'achan Kol Arba Chum Echol Chamash Yostar from Mitzchil HaShesh. V'hachi Kamar. And now, what are we gaining from that extra word in our Mishnah? The following. Kol Shal Shem Motel Echol Kowin B'Truma. That hour where there is a heter achila, not for you and me, but for the Kohanim. That hour where there is a heter achila, Yisrael ma'achil chulin lebehem alachayil ofos. Sorry. Yisrael ma'achil chulin. I'm sorry. Yeah, Yisrael ma'achil chulin. So now the rest of us are allowed to feed the chametz to our animals. So now good. So now we have a Mishnah. Our Mishnah is now being assigned to the position of Rabbi Gamliel, which explains the extra word of mutter. Good. Tosfos, if you remember, back in the first parak, Tosfos says, so now we have a Stam Mishnah going like Rabbi Gamliel. So if I asked you, who does the halacha fall like? So usually the halacha falls like a Stam Mishnah. Certainly Rabbi Yochanan's position. And so why can't you argue now that the halacha should fall like Rabbi Gamliel when we know the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda? Okay, Tosfos asked that question back in the first parak. Anyway. Because it just only because it's extraneous. Because the Mishnah could have gone away with saying.
The word mutter doesn't seem to be referring to
Kohanim. Right, correct. Agreed. It's just that the Mishnah could have formulated itself by saying, Kol shah she'ochel ma'achil. And by expending one extra word, so the Gemara says the Mishnah must be alluding to something. And that's how it arrived to Rabbi Gamliel. Okay? Lebehem l'chayel ofos lamali. Lamali lemisne behema, lamali lemisne chaya. Okay, you're allowed to feed it to your animals. Just simply say your animals. The Mishnah, again, seems to be a little bit verbose. To your behema, to your chaya, to your ofos. Why all three? So we'll get to ofos in just a moment. First, why behema and chaya? Tzricha di'itan behema. Di misharia chazilei. Ava chaya di imisharia kemetzanalei. Aim alone. So now we're going to get into a little bit of the nature of animals. You know, behema, when they leave over, they leave over. So fine, so in other words, you'll just pick it up. But you know, chayas, if you feed it to your chayas, they don't just leave it over. Chayas, they're a little more predatory animals, they're not as domesticated. If there's any food left over, what they're going to do is they're going to hide it. And so, maybe not the best advice to feed your chametz to your chayos that you happen to have in your house, because they're not going to finish it, and they're going to put it away. And now you're going to have chametz in your house. Maybe not recommended. That's why the chiddush of chaya. V'itan chaya mishum di mishari miyam mitzana v'abehem azim di mishari v'lo masik adayte v'kaya la b'valyara v'yamatze. And then we could just simply argue the other direction as well. Meaning, maybe when it comes to the chayas, they'll hide it. But in other words, it's theirs, so to say. But when it comes to the behema, they're just going to leave it over. You're going to forget about it. And then you'll be in violation by your Abayamatse. So therefore, Tzricha, that's why the Mishnah allows me to feed both Chaya and Behema. What about Ofos? Ofos Lamali? I did to tell you about Behemoth Achaya, Tani Nami Ofos, package deal, meaning that you'll see throughout Mishnayos, whenever you have Behemoth Achaya, usually Ofos comes along for the ride. So it's like the Mishnah uses all the time, Grusha of Almana. Am I saying it right? No, I'm not saying it right. Thank you. I knew I was trying to make a point. Right, Grusha v'chalutza. Like, you'll see the Mishnah, so whenever talking about Grusha v'chalutza, even though they're different, a Kohen is also to marry Grusha min HaTorah. Kohen's not allowed to marry a Chalutza min HaTorah, it's only Midrabanan, but again, it's a package deal, they always come together. So here too.
Why the Mishnah is not concerned about the Chayot hiding it, if the point is made?
Right. Again, that's a Havamin, and that's why the Mishnah has to make the point. I guess it's not, it's a concern, but not a big enough concern. Okay. So, and you're allowed to sell it to a non-Jew. So pshita. Now again, here the Gemara is just going to keep attacking the Mishnah again and again, because the Mishnah seems to be making points that are so obvious. So here, you can, during the fifth hour, you could sell your chametz to a non-Jew. Yeah. You're allowed to get benefit. The Gemara says, yeah, but there's a Tana out there that says you can't do it. Beit Shammai is of the opinion that you can't sell chametz to a guy unless you know he's going to finish it before Pesach. You know, it's very similar, right? I don't think this is a legitimate connection, but it's very similar to the machlokas Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel that we had in the beginning of Shabbos. You remember that machlokas where I can't give clothing to a launderer before Shabbos unless he's going to launder my clothing before Shabbos. Now, it's a different issue over there. Beit Shammai does not allow... Beit Shammai requires that you rest on Shabbos, your animals rest on Shabbos, and your material possessions also rest on Shabbos as well. Shvisas Kalim. So, Beit Shammai says it has... Therefore, I can't have Goyim do Malacha with my Kalim on Shabbos. Again, not a position we accept, but certainly an interesting one. It's similar. It's not really based on the same principles, but here too, if I'm selling chametz to a non-Jew, I gotta know that he finishes it before Pesach. That sheet is Beit Shammai. And Beis Hillel says, not necessary. Beis Hillel says, no, you could sell it to a guy even though you know he's not going to finish it before Pesach, which obviously is a position we adopt. But now we understand our Mishnah. Meaning our Mishnah said that you could sell it to a non-Jew during the fifth hour. Obviously, well, after you know the position of Beit Shammai, it's not so obvious. Okay. So, fine. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira Omer, Kutach Chomine, Kutach Chasalim Kor Shoshim Yom Kodol Pesach. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira is of the opinion that you have Kutach. Kutach, you're going to see a lot in our Masechta. The famous cheese dip of Bavel. It was made up of chametz. Cheese, chametz, and honey, if I'm not mistaken. And it stayed in the fridge for a long time. I know that's not anachronistic, but in other words, it was kept around for a long time, and so consequently, because the cheese dip was around for such a long time, so Rav Yehuda ben Beseira says, I can't sell that to a guy once you're within 30 days of Pesach. And it sounds like the simple pshat behind Rav Yehuda ben Beseira is that he's subscribing to the viewpoint of Beit Shammai, which means that you have to ensure that it's finished before Pesach. Right? Tosos doesn't want to arrive at that conclusion. Having another Tana go like Beit Shammai, that's weird. Take a look at Tosos for that discussion. Okay. We'll pause over here. So we are on the threshold now of a very big discussion of the second parak, really the main discussion of the second parak, and that is that we're about to discuss the sources of Isser Hana. It's going to cover us now for the next two, I think three blot of Gemara in terms of how do we know about Isser Hana. I think even more. Maybe even more. So, but a major discussion. We finished the first parak of Pesachim. We finished the discussion of Tumah Tahara, ironing out the sheetahs of Rabbi Yehoshua, Rabbi Eliezer. And then we started the second parak, and the second parak now takes us to the topic of the Isser Chametz on Erev Pesach. Who does our Mishnah follow like? Oddly enough, Rabbi Gamliel, not Rabbi Meir, not Rabbi Yehuda. And then we're going to get into a discussion tomorrow about Isser Hana. Rabbi Chanan ben Akash Amar